The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
I think we're just going to jump in here for the first time since April, reunited with Lainey McCulley, my on-screen daughter.
Yes, sir.
For Country Hearts. And your hair is so long now.
I know. It's so weird. It all of a sudden started growing like a weed. Doesn't make it any more realistic that I think to be your daughter, you would have had to be maybe 15 in real life or something like that. But yeah, we'll go with it.
It's the magic of Hollywood,
it
right?
It really is. Yeah. Nice to see you.
But it was cool to be working with you in that capacity. And it was cool to do the movie. And obviously there's so much to talk about because Country Hearts 2 is about ready to start, debut this week. First of all, I mean, as you know, acting wise, you film this and you do take 5, take 20, take 27, all these different scenes and stuff. And you never really know what you're going to get until you see the edited flick itself. So what did you think overall about Country Hearts when you saw it back?
I love it. I mean, I'm starting to get a little bit used to, well, that just kind of seeing it turn out different than maybe it felt on set. I find it usually helps. Like there's usually like, oh, they made me look better. but no, it's great. And I think they did a great job of the music, which obviously is a key element of this show and the series. But yeah, I think the music turned out really good. The performances were super hype and it was very like right in the feels, which was, I think, the goal. So that feels good.
Yeah. I mean, once again, I thought you did a great job kind of anchoring the whole thing, which was cool. But once again, like I want to obviously talk to you about how you got into this and everything. Cause when I first got the script, mm-hmm. I remember reading it cause I was doing like a lot of, you know, like horror movies and action movies and that sort of thing. And reading the script, I was kind of like, nothing really happens in this. Like, what's the big action sequence? There's a fire in the barn or whatever. Mm-hmm. But once you start reading it, like you said, it's such a different style of movie from what I was used to.
Definitely.
And it really turned out good. It was really kind of a fun, you know, for what they were going for and the demographic that they're going for. I thought that it ended up being really, really cool.
Yeah, I think it's like, it's a funny thing because I remember like, I don't know, this may be TMI, but you know, when I first started doing like MOWs, people would be, which is movies of the week for those that don't
right.
know.
Hollywood talk.
Yeah. And people would say like here and there, they'd be like, well, you got to start somewhere. And I would find that to be the weirdest thing, like the weirdest feedback. And it was always meant harmlessly as a compliment, but it would come out sounding a little condescending. And it's weird because it's like, well, I see how maybe from the outside of the industry, it can look like that or feel like, yeah, nothing happens in this movie. But for one thing, I think there's a ton of actors that would give their left foot to work on a movie like this and just be working, which is a huge privilege. But also, I think once you've done a few of these, I've had the pleasure of meeting some fans of these kinds of movies of the week. Some of my neighbors in my old neighborhood were like super fans and couldn't believe that I moved in. And they were just like, so about it. And from their perspective, I started to ask them, like, what do you love about these movies? Because I didn't really watch them until I started acting in them. And I think what it is for most people is the feedback I get is there's just so much darkness and the world is so stressful and the news is so scary. And I think these movies are, they're very comforting to have nothing too traumatic happen. Like we have enough to worry about. And then at the end of the day, you're going to go see more of that on your TV. So I think people really do feel uplifted by by this type of movie. And so it was same thing for me, is a little bit of a pivot, because I also started with some horror and thriller type stuff. But yeah, once you hit that little groove, you're like, this is actually kind of nice.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, once you get into it, like a lot of stuff does happen. There's a lot of different dramatic points and plot twists and that sort of thing. So for me, like another reason why I really took it seriously is I got an offer.
Right.
Like, which for people that don't know, like to get an offer as an actor is like amazing, because it means you don't have to audition. That means they're looking for you to do the part.
Yeah.
No questions asked. If you want it, you got it. So once again, that sort of thing was like, wow, like I really should check this out and really get into it. And then once you delve into it, like I said, there is a lot happening, just different from what I was used to. How did you get attached to Country Hearts?
It was a similar situation for me. I also got an offer, which, like you just said, is a huge privilege, like so much time saved. It's always like, yes.
Yeah.
And also a lot of like the, like, will I, won't I get it kind of stress is also taken away, which is really nice. It's up to you to make the decision. But yeah, I had actually worked with the company, and the in this situation, it's like a casting / production company combo. And I had done a movie with them before that was also had to do with my character singing. And so they knew that I was a singer and was able to sing the country genre. And so, yeah, I think this, they were like, oh, we have a girl that's kind of in line with this project. And so when they reached out, I was like, yeah, it's even better, because it was more than one project within the one project. So it was like kind of exciting to have a character that got to develop a little further.
Yeah. And like you said, the fact that they were filming two at the same time, you know, that was kind of intriguing to me, kind of like a Back to the Future 2 and 3, where like, we got a lot of stuff going on here. And so they actually have a little bit of a plan for this.
Yeah. And which I think was extra cool. Just like knowing that from the beginning, like not being like, maybe this will turn into more, but already knowing that we had shoot dates set for the second film. So it was sort of like,
right.
It was nice to be able to just develop those characters and kind of like see that arc through versus cutting it off and being like, maybe, like I'd never done a sequel. So it was cool for me.
So had you worked with this production company before? You mentioned that you'd done some stuff where you'd sung before. Had you worked with this actual team?
Yes. So I'd actually done a few movies where I had been a singer, and I was also in a series for Hallmark where my character was a singer. So it's kind of like a space where I feel very comfortable. But this company, I had done one film with them. So they had actual on-set experience with me. And I mean, I think it was good. I hope it was good this time around as well.
That was nothing too. Like at first it was pitched to me like it's like a Hallmark movie, but it's for UpTV. And I didn't like UpTV. Obviously it's a network that now that we have heard about it, you know it, but I didn't really know anything about it. So I was just referring to it as the Hallmark movie.
Totally.
And like you said, when you tell people that, they're almost like you said, it's like, oh, you got to start somewhere. Or my grandma loves those movies. Or it's like, oh, that's cute. Yeah. But it's like, it's not, it's a big deal. There's a lot of people that kind of live and die by the sword by these.
Well, it is. And they do. And I mean, it's funny because you might be surprised who does watch these movies. I've heard, I mean, I can attest that my father loves them and he will cry every time, even though he knows exactly what's going to happen. My mom's like, oh, your father in these movies. And then secretly she's like, watching from the back of the room, like she loves them. Yeah. And also I've heard like war vets actually really love these movies.
Really?
Yeah. For the same reason I mentioned earlier, in that it's kind of, they don't need any more stress. They have a lot of PTSD. And so watching something that's a little more calming and comforting is more what they're looking for. So it's kind of interesting. Who is really watching these movies? It's a bigger crowd than you would think. And yeah, it's cool.
I liked it too. Like, you know, once again, because you're from Canada. I know you live in LA.
Yes, sir.
I'm from Canada. I live in Florida. But going to Toronto to film, it was really cool. Because once again, like you see the script and you know, like Paw, Bones, your dad, is an ex-rock star, but then he's, you know, he has to give up that lifestyle because of his substance abuse. And then he goes to try and become a horse breeder. And like, it's always cool when you show up and see these sets.
Yes.
You know, the sets that they had were actually really, really cool for us, like the stables and all that sort of thing. The whole atmosphere I thought was bigger than I was expecting.
I was so impressed by a lot of the sets, but particularly the horse stables. There was two. There was we shot two locations within the location, but the barn was so pretty. But then there was that huge kind of like, I don't know what you call it, arena?
Yeah.
And it was just massive. And I had to walk that one horse around that thing. And that horse was like, no, I'm done with this. Did you hear about this? On the leg?
No. Tell me the story.
So I hadn't really... which is weird because I grew up in a town called Cloverdale, but I had no like real experience with horses. And when I booked this role in the script, originally Tori was riding horses and she's supposed to be this, you know, pretty accomplished equestrian. So I was like, I better shape up. So I started taking lessons every week and going up to do like trail riding and just like grooming and just kind of really getting comfortable with horses up in Ojai. And it was awesome. I loved it. I found it very meditative. And yeah, I started just kind of getting more used to being around horses. And then I get to set and they're like, oh, we cut all the stuff of Tori riding. It wasn't necessary. Probably a good thing, because I think I was a little intimidated. Like, horses are massive animals.
Right.
And you know, if you don't know how to act around them, they can be dangerous. So I just felt like I wouldn't be able to do my job if I didn't, you know, get that comfort level to a certain point. But yeah, I was, I don't remember the horse's name, but it was just one of those days where this horse did not want to act. It was like, I'm not about this. And
yeah.
The scene with me and Barrett talking, and we're just walking around. And the poor trainer was like, you have to hold him like this. So I did. And at one point she's like, put your hand like across his mouth area and make him move. So I went to do that. And this horse was like, nah. You and just like chomped my thigh. And I'm dying to see that blooper. I hope somebody saved it, because you see the horse go down. It was like, no. Yeah. After that, it took me a couple takes to ease back. Yeah. Luckily it didn't break any skin. And it was just objectively hilarious, but I think having done the lessons ahead of time helped prepare me for that moment.
We have a scene like that too, in that arena. I guess it's more of like a big giant pen,
yeah,
maybe, cool. Whatever you would call it. And it was with Craig, who plays like my worker guy. You know, he's like the guy on the farm who's working and hanging out. And yeah, and the funny thing was that we were had to, like you said, walk around with this horse. And there's actually kind of a scene where the horse is kind of running around. And he's supposed to be running in front, like the cameras are all set up, like Video Village is kind of behind everything, obviously. And so the cameras are there, and then Craig and I and the horse are focused in front. And this guy's supposed to be running from, like, you know, back and forth, like, you know, a horizontal line. And then he decides to just like start running right through Video Village, right through everybody. He's just going on a rampage. And people are like, you know how it is, right? You don't, like, there's no way we're going to get trampled by a horse.
Oh, yeah.
But no, you can easily get trampled by a horse. So, no, everyone's trying to be cool about it. But this horse is running around all over the place, and they're trying to stop it. Like, the trainer's like running, like, no. And the guy's just like, he's like,
but at the end of the day, it's an animal. Like, they said, there's like a rule. I think it's something like in film, you should never work with kids or animals, because you just don't know what they're going to do. And we work with
them. That's the WC Fields motto.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, like, you know, like, how do you stop this guy? And as long as you get, you know, 4 seconds of the horse running in the right place, they can edit it accordingly.
Really, editing is such a thing.
You know, he's just going to knock over all these cameras and all this sort of stuff. Like, he doesn't even care at all.
Oh my God. Well, it's like, I was literally thinking about that on set. I was like, what does a horse think of this? Like, a horse isn't like, I'm here to work. Like, what is going on? Like, I think it's such an interesting perspective, because I do feel like, obviously, there's pretty strict laws when you have an animal on set to make sure it like looks out for the welfare of the animal. But I'm just like, I would love to be inside that horse's mind, being like, what's with these lights? Why is that person with a huge Steadicam? Like, that thing would be scary too. Like, the Steadicam, it's this kind of mechanism where the cameraman is holding the camera, but it's on this kind of, I don't even know what you would call it. It's just like this big piece of metal that kind of extends out the back and around. And then he's got one hand on either end of it and to hold it steady. And so it's just like this huge contraption, and it's black and metal. And I feel like an animal would be, I mean, my dog would be totally weirded out by that.
It almost looks like if you watch the Spider-Man movies, like Dr. Octopus, he's got that big apparatus with all the arms coming out, or like Ripley in Aliens when she drives that thing at the end. You're kind of ensconced 100. Inside this mechanical canopy, but you get to hold it on your back.
There's the word choices I was looking for. Yeah, it's like, it's hard to describe unless you've seen one, but that's a great way of describing it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So So when it comes to touring, obviously my daughters, like you said, which is so funny that are, they're going into country music and it's June and it's Tori. And you mentioned there is a lot of singing in the movie. I know, mm-hmm. especially Country Hearts there was, and even for the trailer of Country Hearts 2, the whole thing is based around the song that you had written. That's going to be a big hit.
Totally.
And you mentioned you have a musical background. Did you sing in this movie as well?
Oh, yeah, I didn't write the music, but I did sing all the songs. I think between the two movies, I think we recorded eight songs total. Some of them were Christmas carols for the Christmas movie, which I don't want to give away too much. It's not out yet. But yeah, we recorded eight songs. I think it was crazy. I think before, back in my day of recording music, you'd maybe do one song. You'd record one song a day, but I think we were doing four per session. So my vocals were just like stripped at the end of these days. But yeah, we did all those. And I forget what your other question was.
No, I was just asking you, like, you know, when you have all these songs that you're doing, you're recording them yourself, and what exactly is your singing background?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. So, I don't know. I kind of have like a genre ADHD where I grew up mostly doing musical theater. I was a dance theater kid. So that was kind of how it started, very like classical voice training. And then after I graduated college, I pivoted and was like, I loved country music my whole life. Like I said, I grew up in Cloverdale, which is a rodeo town in BC. And so I was just, you know, all about that country life. And I put some country music out in Canada. And then I ended up moving to Nashville in 2017. Shortly thereafter, I realized I just didn't really feel country in my bones anymore. Bones. At which point I pivoted to pop music and then really had a lot of fun writing that. And I just started performing a ton around Nashville and kind of putting out music under just my last name. It was Macaulay. And
Yeah,
I was having so much fun with that. And then the pandemic hit and all my shows got canceled. And I came to California to spend lockdown with my now husband. And yeah, I just kind of put the music on hold. And that hold just never ended because I started working a ton in film and TV. So it was never an intentional stop. It just sort of life did life. And yeah, at some point I really do. I miss the studio. I miss writing. I miss performing. So I'd love to start putting music out again at some point. But at the moment I'm really focusing on film. So
that's really cool. I didn't realize that you had done that much. So you actually put out some music in country music in Canada, like some singles and stuff.
I did. Yeah. I had a top 50 song at Canadian radio.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I moved to Nashville because that was the dream. And then, yeah, I think just being in that realm, I was really clear that I loved music still, but I just didn't want to make country music anymore. And it just wasn't me personally. But yeah, I still love country. I still listen to country. I've got lots of friends making great country music. So yeah, it'll always be part of who I am, I think, for sure.
The producers, obviously, you mentioned they offered you this role. They must have known about your singing background.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think my agent had sent them some of my songs, some of my old YouTube videos, and anything that I was like currently writing, stuff that wasn't even released yet. So they were very aware that music was a big part of who I am as a performer. So I think they were definitely aware of that.
Yeah. Once again, it seems like, you know, for both of us that these roles aren't that far off from who we are as people and entertainers, which once again, like for me, when I mentioned before,
I wasn't asking.
Yeah. Like when I mentioned getting this offer and kind of reading the script and paying a lot of attention to it because, you know, knowing that you could have this role if you want it.
Yeah.
I started realizing like it's not that far off from who I am. Like, you know, obviously I'm a singer. I've got young daughters that are just getting ready to go out and do their own thing.
That's a crazy parallel.
No problem reinventing myself and all that sort of a thing. So it really did kind of fit. And I started reading it almost with like my own thoughts and processing it that way. Is that the same way that you did it when you saw the scripts?
Yeah, I think I was going to, well, before I talk about myself, I wanted to ask you about that. So, because I know your rock music is so cool and I wanted to come to your show when you were in LA and it came and went. He's already gone.
Yeah.
Please let me know next time you're coming through LA because I want to come to the show.
I will.
So it was interesting because like in the movie, I'm a country singer and mom was country, but you were rock and that's what you actually do. So like you said, it was like weirdly close to our, And so did you find, because for me to answer your question, it was very much like a lot of this character is just kind of who I am. I don't have to do like a ton of character research in the sense that I've kind of been preparing for this role my whole life by being so similar to the role. But then it's like an interesting thing where you're like, but I'm not Tori. I'm not, you know, so it's almost like for me, my process is almost easier when it's a character that's so far from who I am, mm-hmm. because then I'm just like taking on a whole, maybe I'll change my voice a little, maybe I'll change my physicality. Like I'm just dropping into just this entirely different person. But when a character is, like you said, parallel in these movies, like Bones is to you and Tori is to me, it's like, how do I make this character Tori and not just Lainey called Tori, you know? So it is, it's almost weirder. I hope that that, you know, came across, but at the end of the day, it's still my body, my vehicle, my voice. So I think at the end of the day, Tori is just kind of similar to me, and that's, we're going to have those similarities come through.
You were there for like the majority of the filming, pretty much from day one until day done. I remember I kept kind of popping in and out, but you were there for a full, was it a month? Was it 6 weeks? How long was that?
It was actually, it was just under 7 weeks. I spent 7 weeks in Toronto. That hotel room, I actually loved that hotel.
It was great.
But at a certain point, those white walls started to feel a bit like an asylum. I was like, I need a change of scenery. Like I'm starting to get weird. So 7 weeks. I have some family in that area of Canada. So I was able to visit them. I think it was during Easter. So I did like an Easter dinner and kind of just some family business, which was really nice. I don't get to see them a lot being in LA.
Sure.
But yeah, it was a lot of filming, and it was kind of cool because there was a bit of different cast between the two movies, or at least like my days on set were with different areas of the cast. But yeah, you were busy. You were like flying in for shows, flying out for, everything. And you were still, you were doing matches and everything too, right?
Yeah, it was one of those things where the opportunity came up right in the middle or right after a Fozzy tour, and then I was still doing AEW wrestling shows. Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those ones where it's like, I've only got these, you know, 8 days to make it work. And they were able to reconfigure it to fit into the schedule. Which once again, like when a production is going to do that, you know, they really are interested in having you, which is an honor as well. So, but for you, did they film pretty much one movie first and the second movie second? Were they kind of going back and forth a bit?
Yes, they did. I think because there was a director change, one director did the first movie and then Amy did the second. Marco, shout out to Marco for the first. I think because of that, they just kind of did it like a block, like movie one, movie two. But I think because they did some pickups, right, for you when you came back, they kind of popped in and did like some first movie stuff. But for me, it was very much like focusing on movie one and then let that one go, focus on movie two, which was kind of nice because I think there had been a little bit of character development between the two. And so kind of jumping back and forth on that timeline. I mean, I see actors do it in these time travel movies and stuff. I'm like, I don't know how y'all keep track of what point. Like I heard that some of the actors had to be like hyper vigilant in everything everywhere all at once. Am I saying that right? That movie is just like a total time warp constantly, and so just knowing where your character is at to like have that inform your work on that day would be so confusing. But yeah, for me, I didn't have to do that in this case because it was very much block shot for movie one and then movie two.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I wasn't like for me when obviously Marco DeFumia and then Amy Forrest, which is a great name. Amy Forrest took over.
I mean, they both have great names.
Yeah, to take over the second movie. And for me, I was a little bit like not worried, but you know, like I found two separate directors for basically the same movie because it is one long continuous story. Like, if, for example, when Country Hearts ended, a lot of my friends that and fam that watched the movie was like, "That's it. There's so many untapped plot lines." They didn't know that there was a second one.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That would be very weird to not know there was more coming. They just didn't answer anything. Yeah. It's like.
But I was thinking, like, is this going to be tough to have a different director on the same project? Obviously, it worked out great, and both were talented directors and had a different way of doing things. But how did that work for you, being there for so long and having one director locked in, and as soon as you got it done, you got to move into somebody new?
That's a good question. I think there was a little of that same same fear just because you kind of hit a stride with Marco for the first movie. Right. And I also had worked with Marco on that the movie I was talking about earlier that I had worked with this company on before. So I knew Marco really well. And I mean, if anyone is listening to this knows Marco, he's like your sarcastic big brother. Like, he's going to take the piss out of you and he's going to make fun of you if you say something dumb. And I find comfort in that. Like, that's how I roll. So, you know, you kind of have that easy
very easy to work with. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So I was like, oh no, you know, is it going to be a weird, you know, huge divert from that? But yeah, it definitely wasn't my experience. Obviously Amy's style is different, but not bad different, just her own. And so, yeah, I think there was like a few days of adjustment because the only person that changed was the director in terms of the crew and everyone. I think pretty much everyone stayed the same. So there was like a couple of days where like, oh, this is a different set now. It's just someone else's style. But I think after day 3-4, you know, you hit that groove again and Amy was great. So
yeah, I think it was a little bit kind of challenging too. Like I said, for me, like as an actor, I felt really kind of like, you know, challenge because it's not what you expect Chris Jericho to do. And then having two separate directors and kind of, you know, because they did have different styles. Amy, I felt Amy was a little bit more serious than Marco was.
Yeah, she's very like focused. And I think she also gives, I would say, more feedback. Like, she's more like, I want the performance this way. Whereas Marco was like, second take, that's fine. He's just more like, you do that how you want. And Amy's like, I envision it this way. And I think it's cool to kind of try both and see how your work changes as a result.
Yeah, exactly. But I like that kind of like for me, because, you know, once again, you kind of fall into the groove with Marco, which is great. But then now you got to kind of reshake everything up again. And here we go. So that's, I just dug that, you know, once again, just the whole thing for me was like a real acting kind of boot camp, if nothing else.
100%. I feel like that every time I work on a new project is like, it's our job is so weird in that way because you never are working with the same team. Like, there's people in their normal person jobs that are like, you know who they're working with, and it's like you have this rapport. And in ours, it's like you show up on day one and it's different with every new project. And so you're just constantly learning from different people. I think it's really actually a very cool aspect of the job. But I wanted to ask you, so coming from doing kind of more horror type stuff, what obviously was a pivot for you, and you were like, oh, this isn't what people expect Chris Jericho to do. So what was your initial feeling? Did you feel out of your element? Did you feel like too cheesy? Did you totally not care at all? Like, I'm curious what that felt like for you.
Yeah, no. So the thing is with wrestling, especially with me, like there's a lot of backstage, you know, vignettes and backstage segments that you do in wrestling because it's all storytelling, right? So you're telling the story that leads up to the match. So if people don't know wrestling, they think it's like, hey, let me tell you something, brother, I'm going to kick your ass. Like, that's such a small part of what you do. And for me, I never do that. It's very much deeper and a lot more layers. So I didn't feel out of my element at all. I felt really like this is very dramatic and there's a lot of drama in wrestling too. But once again, I think for me, I guess, I don't know if it's the most challenging thing, the most interesting thing was having daughters on the show, like you and June and, you know, and then having a wife in the movie. You know, like that was, I don't think I've ever had a wife on screen or definitely not daughters on screen. So that was kind of interesting too. Like how, like I remember the one scene that we did where we were outside. It was really cold that morning and I was giving you remember that? Yeah.
Sorry. I've never seen anyone look as cold as you looked. You couldn't really see it though in the movie. It wasn't obvious at all, but I just remember feeling so bad for you because I think they had you like in like a t-shirt or something. And I actually had a layer. So I remember being like, I feel so bad for you right now. Cause it really was cold. It was like 0 degrees.
And I'm from Canada, so I shouldn't even be selling it, but it was really cold. It was early in the morning.
Florida, so you get a
pass. That's true. But it was the scene. I think I gave you a guitar and then I was like wishing you well on your trip. And you were like, thanks dad for believing in me. Actually, I think it made it into the trailer actually. But that to me, like, you know, from a method standpoint, like I'm envisioning talking to I have twin daughters, Sierra and Cheyenne. They're both 17 and they're senior year. So I'm kind of envisioning that. So so for me, that was the biggest difference is actually having a family on screen. And then how do I incorporate that into, you know, things that I've experienced with my own kids.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's so funny because there's all these schools of thought around acting and methods, I guess. But it's funny because like on set, sometimes you just don't get the luxury of taking the time to do a certain process that may be helpful to you. Like sometimes you're filming one scene and then, you know, maybe you're shooting 12 pages that day and it's just a crazy day. And then all of a sudden you have like a big emotional scene and they need you to perform like right now. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, just give me 1 second. And someone's like, and rolling. And you're like, so you just gotta like get somewhere. And so like, you know, if it's like a scene where like for like same as you for that particular scene, it's like, I'm very close with my dad. I'm very close with both my parents, but it was very easy to just slip into that. Like, how would it feel? How did it feel when I literally moved to Nashville in my life? But as Lainey. And I mean, on that particular day, I have a photo of my parents and they don't even look like themselves. They'd been crying all morning. My dad's wearing sunglasses and their faces are all like distorted and puffy because they're just like, they look like they're in pain. And so I just like, it wasn't very hard to tap into that. So that I agree. It's like, because of these parallels, it's like, you know, you just really, the method is, how was it with my own situation similar to this? But yeah, there's been other times where I need to cry on the spot hysterically. And I'm like, maybe that scene has to do with a breakup, but I don't really have a recent breakup that upsets me. I'm so happy in my relationships. Yeah. I'm like, I can't really pull from that unless I really dig from like my past or something. And I don't have the time for that. I just need to cry. Yeah. I'm going to look at a photo of my dogs, either one of them, and picture the day I have to say goodbye. Like, I need that. Yeah. I need those tears right now. it's going to be a very different kind of, I guess some would probably call that a cheat or a cheap.
But that's part of your process. And that's hard to cry on cue.
Yes, it can be. It is funny. Some days it seems like no trouble at all. And other days I'm like, I'm just feeling really good. I'm feeling really happy. I love my job. I'm happy I'm here, you know, and it's hard to like, you know, because I think we spend our whole lives as humans, not as actors, just trying not to let whatever has happened to us, whether it's any kind of trauma or anything that hurts us, a heartbreak, a loss, and not letting those things just be exposed nerves at all times, or we just all be walking around bawling or angry all time. So we spend our whole lives putting these walls up. And then as an actor, you're like, you have 45 seconds to pull that wall down and just show everything. And it's just like this kind of like crazy push and pull of emotions. I think it's a really crazy part of our job, but it is so interesting to sort of explore different methods and learn how to, for lack of a better word,
that. I found that too when we were doing ADR, which is additional dialogue recording. So this is like, you know, months later and you go into the studio and you have to reread these lines. Or maybe they didn't catch the line, or maybe the audio was off, or maybe they rewrote something. But like you said, you just wander in and it's Tuesday afternoon at 4 o'clock or 2 o'clock. And it's like, you have to read these lines here and you got to remember what was going on in the scene. And maybe you're a little bit sad or maybe a little bit angry or whatever it is. And that to me is true acting, because you're not even in the context of like having your, you know, your costume on or knowing what happened before or after. That dropping into that very quickly was interesting.
That's a really good point. I think ADR is such a weird thing for that exact reason. It's like, you don't have the luxury of like looking around at the set. That's really helping your brain kind of envision where your character's at. And so you just kind of are in this soundproof room, just like trying to drum up some emotion. Yeah. Right. Sometimes I find like, I'm sure you've done the same thing, is like, if your character is like out of breath or like really emotional, I'm like trying really hard to like match the tone even.
Yes,
and it's more, more forced because you're not in it the same way. And so like, I've had like full on workouts in an ADR room, breath and stuff. Yeah. It's weird. It's a very strange phase of the production process. Do you like doing ADR as a singer? Do you find it fun?
I don't know if it's fun. I find it probably the most challenging of anything. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because like you said, you got to drop right into this world that you left months ago, you know, and that to me was cool. Another thing that I was thinking about too is like, for you, every morning in the movie as well, you have like 18 different hairstyles. Like, you've got braids, you've got curls, and you're like, do you show up and you know what you're looking for? Do they just say, here's what we're going to do today? Does the script call for different hairstyles? Like, how does that work?
You know, it's so funny. I mean this with love. A man would ask that question.
Of course.
They give you one hairstyle. I'm a little envious because I spent a lot of time sitting in that chair.
My hair was up and my hair was down. That was it. The end.
It's like, so the makeup artist in this case, it was Taylor. Shout out Taylor. Yeah. And her, Alex as well. Both fantastic. I think so Taylor's got like the call sheet for the day and it'll show, you know, what scenes are up for those that aren't familiar with the call sheet. And then she knows from her little book, it'll say like, oh, if we're doing scene 12 and scene 20 today, they know that scene 12 takes place in the script on day 4 or day 4 day, if there's a different, you know, and then scene 20 takes place. So she's kind of literally looking, she's got it in her book, day 5, day 7, day 2. And then, so then during the day, as the scenes come up, she's going, we got to get you in your day 2 look. We got to get you in your day 20 look, like whatever it may be. So yeah, it is a lot. It's like an extra, you know, kind of sitting there working on the work. And then you got someone yanking in your hair in the meantime. Yeah. This one is in particular, because there was so much braiding and like Tori was a little extra too, because she's a farm girl, but then she's also a performer. So we just had like a real spread of hairdos. Definitely.
But I like that too. Like when we did the photo shoot, you know, I was just thinking like when I saw the posters, I was like, this is like Yellowstone without like anybody getting killed. Like I really kind of incorporate a lot of that John Dutton, Kevin Costner into the role that I was playing. And then, you know, there's the family and I don't know, it just had a real kind of like PG version of Yellowstone. And just seeing those posters that we did just really kind of came together. It looked very cool.
Yeah, it is. It is so weird because I think it's something that's easy to take for granted too. It's like, I remember when I first started acting professionally, like in film and TV, I grew up doing commercials and stuff, but to do actual film acting, I remember just wanting so bad to get one scene or one line in a Lifetime movie and just being like seeing, you know, friends book like a guest star or any level of role that was bigger than an actor role. An actor role is a, sorry, I don't know if this is helpful to give this context. You can just cut me off if not. But yeah, an actor role was so confusing at first because like they're all actor roles. But an actor classified role is, I think, something like 1 to 3 lines or like one scene. It's considered small.
And if you're not, then you're extra.
Yes, exactly. And then a lot of people start with their first speaking role will be like an actor role. Or I think in that's a Canadian term. There's my Canadian coming out. I think in the U.S. it's called a co-star. Gotcha. Which to me sounds like a lead.
So yeah, I'm sure it does.
By the terminology when I first enter. But yeah, anyways, my point is I just remembered, you know, just dying, like wanting so bad just to get that one actor role. And then you grow up or keep at it. And then you all of a sudden, and you're the face on a poster. And it's like, it's so easy to take that for granted. And then you see the poster come out and you're like, whoa.
It's really cool. But yeah.
Also, I think it was, now I'm confusing the two posters for Country Hearts and Country Hearts Christmas, but one of them, it looks like the horse is me because it says like the horse and then right above the horse, it says my name. And I was like, they should build a horse like that, especially because it caught my leg. It deserves to have some, you know, some real recognition.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You know, I love too about this, like just thinking about the actual script, because once again, it is very much a Lifetime, Hallmark, Up TV, kind of the same idea, very much love stories and intertwining, you know, love dramas and love triangles. And there's a little bit of a religious stint to it. Yeah. But in the script that I loved was, as I was reading through the first one, it would say something like, you know, Barrett walks in and in brackets, it would say shirtless scene. And then later on, somebody like shirtless scene. I'm like, is there a certain amount? Do they have like a bare minimum of shirtless scenes that they need in each script to qualify?
That's really funny. I don't know if I ever saw that script because that's news to me. I may have gotten a version because I think you were attached before I was. So
okay, maybe.
That's very funny. I think if anything, it might be the opposite where there might be a max number of shirtless scenes. That would be my guess. I mean, I'm just totally talking on my ass, but I'm guessing because of the family nature of the movie, they're probably allowed a certain amount of like male upper body and they probably have to like cut the cord. But it always cracks me up because I know, I don't know about Up TV, but I know on other networks that are similar, there's rules like women can't show toe.
No toe.
Toes, you can't show shoulder. Yeah, there's like all these really funny, and men have to be clean shaven. I think they've recently changed it to like men are allowed to have facial hair now because there's nothing edgier than a beard.
Or whiskers. Nothing says bad boy more than whiskers.
Nothing says bad boy, which in this case would imply that I guess Roddy is the bad boy.
He's the bad boy, yeah.
He kind of was the bad boy.
I guess he kind of was. It was just funny because Craig's so Southern California chill.
So, like, yeah, he's so chill.
Bad boy ever.
And, you know, speaking of Craig, I think he did a really amazing job, like kind of wrangling horses for someone that had no experience. Like, he didn't take any sort of lessons like I did. And he was arguably much more comfortable with the horse scenes. And they actually had him riding a horse because he's also supposed to be, you know, your barn hand. So
he's a wrangler. Yeah.
A real level of comfort with these animals. But he didn't do any like prior horse riding or anything. And so when he got to set and they were like, do this, do that, he was like, okay. And just like jumped in. And I give him credit because he totally looked comfortable doing all that.
Well, it's one of those things whenever, like, you know, you're up for a role, it's like, can you skydive? Of course I can skydive. You know, can you do, you know, biochemistry? Yes, of course I can.
And you know what the funny thing is? Do you know what every actor puts falsely on their resume? Horseback riding.
Oh, yeah.
So, I actually heard that like trope years ago. So I took horseback riding off because I was like, I can do it. And then I heard that trope, I took it off. And then I found out about this movie. I started digging the lessons. I put that shit back on.
Obviously you had a great relationship on screen with June, your sister, Katarina Maria. Yeah. She did a great job too. How was that too? Because, you know, once again, we're all actors here. And so you're my daughter. I got to jump right in and I'm your dad. Mm-hmm. She's your sister. But the whole crux of the movie is that Tori really wants to go for it. And June's kind of a little bit hesitant because of her dick husband. He was such a jerk in the movie. He was such a jerk. Justin was terrible. Like, everyone is like, I hate Justin, and we want to see him get fireballed.
I know. We're like, ooh.
I know.
Weird behavior, dude. character, not the actor. He was lovely.
Yes.
But it was kind of similar in the sense, like we were talking about earlier with your daughters. I have a sister, and she and I have definitely, over the course of our teenage years and stuff, had moments where we kind of grew apart or had our little rifts, but I talk to her quite literally 5 to 10 times a day. Like, we're just in constant communication. There's no end to it. It's never bye or like, see you next week. It's literally just like, everything is open end because I'm going to talk to you again in 2 hours. And so I think Tori and June had a very similar relationship. And so, I think Kat was the first person I met. Yes, because when I came to do hair tests right before we started filming the first movie, she was also there for that. So she was the first cast member I met in person. And we went out to Soho in Toronto and got some drinks. And we actually stumbled across like into this party that was a masquerade party. And somebody supplied these like masquerade masks to us. And we just like stumbled into this like party and had a really great night. So we were able to do that kind of early on in filming for some bonding. And yeah, it was just very easy to sort of, you know, play that relationship with her and really just pull from my relationship with my own sister, because I think it was very similar. Like, two people who are so similar in terms of Tori and June, the characters, and, you know, they've got so much in common, but also they're living very, very different lives. Like, Tori's kind of flitting around with the guy she's interested in, can't decide who she
three
loves.
Or four different guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then you've got June, who's in a marriage, like very settled down, feeling torn because her husband isn't 1000% supportive of this, like, on the road musician life. So I think it was kind of cool to have that same dichotomy of similarity, but also conflict or difference, because I know a little bit about that with my own sister.
So you mentioned hair tests. What does that mean?
Oh, so this kind of speaks to your question earlier, is like, for women and probably some dudes on a lot of movies, I'm sure, if you have a larger role in a movie or a series, the hair team and the makeup team, I think we did makeup tests as well, wants to kind of get a sense of like your hair, because there's a lot of different textures and thicknesses and lengths and cuts. So they want to get a sense of that ahead of time. So they're not like, you know, it's like performing on day one if they don't touch your hair before the first day. And then also in situations like this, they tried maybe 5 to 10 different hairstyles, and then they take photos of it and then send them to the execs so that the execs can approve it. Because it is so, I think a lot of people don't realize how many minute details are signed off on by network or by.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's not, I mean, Taylor, for example, had all the creative like power. Like she's the one coming up with the hairstyles, or I might say, hey, I love French braids. My character is a horseback rider and they actually approved it. I was so stoked. But I don't usually get that kind of say on hair. I might throw out a suggestion, but yeah. So Taylor is kind of creatively coming up with all the hairstyles and then taking photos and seeing what the execs or the network and or the network like in terms of the character and what they want her to appear as. So yeah, that's a hair test. It's
interesting.
It's an interesting part of the process.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I want to talk a little bit about the rest of your career. You mentioned you started doing commercials. Is that like a kid actor, like a child actor sort of thing? What kind of commercials were you doing?
So yeah, I started when I was a baby. My brother was in commercials. My mom kind of put him into it because he was really shy. She thought it might help. And he was in an audition for something and I was a one-year-old. So I was just with my mom and him.
Yeah.
And they needed a baby for this Ride a Mickey commercial. Is like this little, like, I don't even, like, it's like you sit on it and you just like meep, 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 meep. Like you're one, like you're just a little waddler. And so I did that was my first commercial. I booked it on the spot and I ended up doing over 100 commercials as like a kid. And then and the main thing that I did a lot of Barbie, and the thing that I did a lot of was Bratz dolls. I don't know if your daughters
like those. I remember seeing them. Yeah
I did like 30 something, maybe 40 something commercials for Bratz. And then there's one that got really viral and I've like been hiding myself from the internet because it was a little risque and it went like, it goes viral every few months with a new meme. And it's always like somewhat related to being slutty, which is hilarious. Cause I think I was 16, but I looked 11 like at that point. And right. I did this commercial. It was called Bratz Secret Date. And I actually loved the Bratz dolls. I played with Bratz like way later than anyone should have. I think I was probably 14 when I stopped actually playing with them, maybe 13. But yeah, that one commercial like haunts me all the time. And it's objectively hilarious.
why were you a slutty 16-year-old in a Bratz commercial?
So yeah, I guess if you aren't familiar with it or you've never seen one of the memes, basically the context of the product was you would get one of the girl dolls. At that point, I think it maybe was six characters. So I always represented the blonde doll, Chloe. And so like they kind of had one girl in each commercial that would represent, you know, one of the dolls. But in this particular one, they only used me, and the dolls would come with the girl. And then one of the boy dolls would also come, but he would be behind like, I don't know, like a piece of plastic. So you wouldn't know which male doll you were getting. And they changed with every box. So it was kind of like exciting, like, which one am I going to get?
Right.
And that was part of the appeal. But in the commercial, my character is like running into the bathroom and they did this like time lapse thing where I run in PJs and I immediately run out and I'm fully decked. And I like have this wild early 2000s hairstyle and I'm like wearing just a little slutty crop top and I think a skirt and hooker boots, and there's like a tight on the hooker boot getting done up.
Yeah,
it's actually pretty hilarious. And honestly, the outfit is fire. And I swear I started the hair with all of the butterfly clips. Like, I swear I started that.
You started
now
the whole trend.
All doing it again. But yeah, so it was like very, very, you know, and then all of a sudden at the end, I open the door and the dude is behind the Bratz, like, so you don't know what the dude is. And then like back in the day when it first came out, there wasn't TikTok yet. So it was YouTube and all the YouTube comments were like, I wonder who my client will be tonight. And just like all these like, you know, inferences. And meanwhile, I was literally 16 when I filmed that commercial. So it was definitely not the case at all. It was very harmless. And I loved doing the commercials. They were really fun. But yeah, I think the media took it and ran with it. And yeah, that's part of my
history. So you've been working a pretty steady working actor pretty much since 2013 or so. So I'm going to go through your IMDb and ask you about about a couple of your projects and just give me your thoughts on them.
Okay. Oh gosh. No one's ever done this. I'm nervous.
How about, okay. Blood Brothers, Reign of Terror. That sounds pretty scary.
That was like an indie horror film. I had never taken an acting class. I had no idea what I was doing. I think I must've blocked that out of my memory because I don't have any memory of that shoot. I was really young, I think. Yeah. So that is all I can contribute to that one.
How about you played Amy Locane in the unauthorized Melrose Place story? Tell us about that.
I did. That one was really fun because it was one of those, like, I was trying to embody a real person. So I just watched some old Melrose episodes and just tried to like take on her body language, but it was a pretty small role. I wasn't in a lot of the film. So
like a documentary, like a biopic on Melrose Place.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I never know how to say that word either.
I'm Canadian.
But it was weird because it was like every actor had three names because there was like me, Lainey, and then I was playing Amy Locating the actress, and then she had her character's name on Melrose Place. So it was so confusing on set because every actor, and it was a big group of us, had literally three names, and no one knew who anyone was talking about at any point. So that's a fun fact about that shoot.
All right, you also played Aaron in Bad Date Chronicles.
Yes. That was my first character with glasses. I was quirky, so that was a nice change for me. I think that might have been my first like major role in a rom-com. And also, I met one of my very best friends, Merritt, on that movie. She was in it as well. So we're still friends. She lives like 15 minutes from me now, so that's pretty cool.
Okay, now we go from straight A's to triple X.
Oh my God. Okay, you're like roasting me here. I know you don't mean to, but these are like all of the, I'm like, we don't have to talk about these. That one is the worst because that was actually my first offer. I did an audition for that. It was just an offer. It was a really small, like one scene role, probably an actor role, maybe.
The blonde girl is how you were.
The blonde girl. And the worst part, the reason I say it's the worst is because my character didn't have a name because she just runs into a character in a bar. Uh-huh. And so I didn't have a name. So I was just Blonde Girl. But because of the title of the movie, it implies it might be a different kind of film. So that was a scripted TV movie on the Lifetime Network, for the record.
Gotcha. You've done some voice work too. I'm looking at The Littlest Pet Shop,
yes.
A World of Our Own, four episodes. Carmella Wingbat. So you do that. Obviously, it was a cartoon.
Yes. Yeah. It was actually, I think that might be one of my favorite jobs. It was just so much fun. I love being in the vocal booth. Like, I love ADR. I find it really fun. I love recording anything, whether it's music or a cartoon voice, like anything in a vocal booth. I just feel so comfortable in there. It's fun for me. That one was really fun because she was like this adorable little like bat. She was a shy fruit bat. and she was like a singer that was afraid to sing because she was so shy. And it was like this little raspy voice, and I like had to sing in the raspy voice and stuff. It was really cute. I think actually if I could manifest or like, you know, goal board something, I think I would probably say in my top three goals for the next 5 years, I want to do more voiceover work. I really love it.
It's such a benefit too, that you can sing. I'm sure that helps a lot for not just voiceover, but just for roles in general.
Totally. I think a good chunk of my leading roles have been as characters who are singers. So it's definitely a bit of a pocket for me where I sit. I mean, I should at some point and want to explore a lot of different roles, but that's one, you know, I'm very grateful for the work. And anytime I get to sing, it's a huge win.
Last few here on your resume, Chesapeake Shores was a TV series that you did.
Yes.
Looks like 8 episodes, maybe short-lived or whatever. So tell us about that. What channel was that on?
So that was Hallmark. That was a Hallmark show. This one's kind of special to me because I was living in Nashville at the time and I was actually going through just like a really shit year, shit couple of years, I think. And yeah, this was my first major recurring role. So at the time I was flying from Nashville to Vancouver and then taking a ferry from Vancouver to Vancouver Island.
Oh, wow.
Doing like a couple days and then flying back to Nashville for writing sessions I had booked and then getting on another plane. And it was just like so.
It's a long way too. Yeah.
Aggressive. Exactly. Yeah. Nashville is shockingly far from Vancouver, BC. But yeah, it was like a lot of travel and it was super fun. I came in on season four. So my character was Jesse Metcalf's character's love interest in the show that season. And so I came in like after all these other characters were established, but it was so much fun and just a really great crew. They'd been around kind of working with each other for a few years. So it was just a really tight group of people and everyone was super nice. And I got to sing in that one as well. That might've been my first major singing role actually. So that was, yeah, it was special for a lot of reasons. It was, and it kind of helped pull me out of my, you know, shitty era where everything just was not working out. And then after that, I switched to pop. I started really getting excited about music again. And I think it kind of helped change the tides in my life. So yeah, I've got a special love for Chesapeake Shores.
And then you also starred in the podcast Murders, which is apropos since we're doing a podcast.
Okay, that one, I am legit super proud of that movie. It was my first lead in a thriller. And I think now it was originally Lifetime, but I think it's on Apple TV and someone said they saw it on Hulu. And so it's, you know, pretty accessible and it was a really edgy role. I also got to do like a ton of physical activity. Like my character had a lot of running scenes, a lot of boxing. Yeah, yeah. And so it was just like super active. And then I actually did another Lifetime movie right after that, that was also very physically active. And I realized how much I love that. So it just like takes you right out of your head.
Sure it does. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was saying about the whole Country Hearts thing was there was not a lot of that sort of action, but it's cool when you get to break free and do that. Now, what is the difference between Country Roads Christmas and Country Hearts Christmas? Because you're in Country Roads Christmas as well.
I sure am. I lost count of the number of times I accidentally said Country Roads Christmas on set of Country Hearts Christmas. The long and short is nothing and a lot. I think the characters are both singers. There's a big Nashville tie to both. They're both kind of feel good Christmas movies. But yeah, the characters have very different arcs and very different, like for one thing, Country Roads Christmas, there's one love interest. Country Hearts Christmas, there is several.
Spinning plates.
Yeah, there's definitely some differences, but for sure some similarities as well.
As we start to wind down here, obviously we're talking about Country Hearts Christmas.
Yes.
And I'm excited because once again, a lot of these loose ends from Country Hearts gets tied up.
Yes.
Lots of drama. Again, for the family.
Absolutely.
And the big one I was laughing at is like the girls get a chance to play. I'm assuming it's kind of like, you know, like New Year's Rockin' Eve or something. It's the big Christmas Eve special, yeah. But they're hesitant because they want to be home for Christmas Eve. And I'm like, who cares? Just do it.
You know, what's so funny is I felt the same way reading that in the script. And I think that's very telling of you and me and like our goals,
our
personalities, because like I've always lived my life that way. And that's just how this industry works too, is like when you get an opportunity, you take it. It could be years before, you know, so you just do it. And this idea that like, you know, especially with a father that is in the industry.
And the mother too.
If anyone understood, it would be you. And I think, I mean, I haven't seen the edit of Country Hearts
Christmas.
It's Country Hearts Christmas. Yeah. I'm making sure I didn't say the wrong one. But I hope that it comes across that like dad absolutely does understand that and Bones.
Yeah.
Totally gets the opportunity, but it's just that family values are so important too. Cause I think there are a lot of people that wouldn't be like you and me, Chris, where it's you do career first, especially when you're young, you know, career first while you've got the chance. And when something comes up, you grab it because you don't know when it will come around again. Like I still live my life that way. And thank God I have a husband that absolutely understands. It's kind of the same with his career. He's a lawyer and he goes like, he's off to trial. I'm like, bye, see you in a couple of weeks. So I'm lucky that I have someone that understands that. But I think for a lot of people, it's not that way. It's like family first always, and everything else has to fit in around that. And I wouldn't say I'm not family oriented, but I think that at least with my family and my husband now, it was always understood that it was like a temporary thing, like maybe a one-off this, you know. My parents used to say, book a family vacation because then Lainey will book a commercial. Like it's a thing to do that was, you know.
But you're right. I think that's kind of the whole concept of Up TV, which is very much family values. There's a little bit of a Christian theme to the network and all that sort of thing. But once again, like Country Hearts, I think turned out great. I have no doubt that Country Hearts Christmas will be the same. And I don't know if you know, but the Country Hearts was a big hit on Up TV. The ratings spiked.
No one knew me.
Yeah, like they, without giving too much away, within that world of Up TV, Country Hearts did a great number.
That's awesome.
So if Country Hearts Christmas does a great number, would you be interested in doing more with this world that we've created?
Oh, for sure. I mean, any chance to work is, you know, it's a privilege, especially after a strike, you know,
yeah.
I think everyone's itching to just, it's not even like, just, I love being on set. Like I love being at work and I think I miss that so much, but so that's, I mean, that's one thing. And then on top of that, there's, I think it's been really cool that we have this established cast and that we've all kind of got a rapport now and we got to see these characters like kind of grow over the arc of two different movies and just being able to take those storylines even further would be a great privilege. So
I was excited, like I said, like being there and getting into the meat of it. It's like there were some really great characters, there's some great actors involved, and I thought the scripts were really well done. So it's one of those things, if Up TV wanted to do more, I would be more than excited to do it, whereas I don't know if I would have felt that way prior, but now it's like I really like this whole vibe that we have on this show.
100%. And I think too, like who you work with is a big thing. Like obviously I had some people that were huge fans of yours before I started working with you. And I was like, I hope he's not a dick. But you absolutely are not. And you were not. And yeah, you were just everyone. Like I had a lot of people ask me, obviously, including my agent, like, what's he like? And I was very happy to report. I think the words I always use for you, Chris, are class act.
Because you are
just very humble and kind. And for anyone listening, I had a friend who whose dad is just a super fan of Chris. She watched a lot of your matches growing up with him, and Chris took the time to send him a very thoughtful video, and that's just who you are. And for that reason too, I haven't always had that experience of, you know, having super, super pleasant co-stars at all times. Mm. I've been lucky for the most part, but and that has a big bearing on it too. And I would absolutely love the chance to work with you again.
Was it a Ron Burgundy coffee cup that you gave me? Is that what you, or was, no, it was the Talladega Nights.
Talladega Nights, yeah. Because here's why. Full disclosure, I gave the same gift to Marco. So because the three of us, there was a lot of scenes where Chris had to say, dear Jesus, and like pray before a performance or a big decision. And I think I lost track of the times when Marco would say like, dear sweet infant baby Jesus or whatever.
When they're praying at the table.
To get you guys, and it is something. I don't care if it was a t-shirt or a mug or what, but it has to say that phrase on it.
Last question for you. What's your favorite scene in either of these movies? Is there one of the scenes you enjoyed doing?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I know for me, while you're thinking, my favorite, or one of my favorites, is when we were sitting at the table in Country Hearts, and that's actually in the trailer. It's like when you sign this, like, you know, you lose all rights to you know, the song. It becomes their song. And that's something that's very true in the world of music. When you write a song, we have a gold record for a song, Judas, and I use it as my ring song in AW, but we still have to get permission and pay the rights fees. Like, it's not our song anymore. It's owned by somebody else once you sign the dotted line. So that to me was a pretty cool, intriguing scene with you and I and Katarina.
Right. And you really relate to that. So there's
Thomas
Truth is maybe teaching a little something to people who, you know, aren't familiar with the industry. I don't want to give away too much because I'm trying to remember which scenes were in which movie, but so there's one scene where you and me are decorating a Christmas tree.
Right.
And I think at that point, like I don't know if we end up shooting more movies in this series, I don't know who Tori will end up with. I actually haven't been told that information, or if I don't even know if the writer knows, but there's a point where Bones knows that Tori might have a little thing for Roddy. And I'm just like, oh, where is he? And you're like, and there's like a, because I think there's been like an establishment that like Tori and Luke are like in the friend zone, and obviously Barrett's a bad boy. And then Roddy's like, could they be? And I think that's the first scene where I like maybe clocked him as like a potential suitor. And then you're like, I don't know why. It's not like a standout scene, like emotional or anything, but there's something about it that I just think is very like, I don't know, just very like a close father-daughter. I'm not going to ask too much because I just thought it was really sweet. Oh man. I think otherwise this is going to be so cliche, but I think maybe a performance scene where I'm in the barn with Luke and that like,
where I'm spying on you.
Yes. Yeah.
Where you write the song.
Yeah. I just think there's something about that scene. It's very like stripped down and just kind of, magical, you know, I just got that like that movie kind of sparkle on it. And I think also, kind of rad that she just like chilling, singing in amongst her horses. And there was literally horses around us.
There was, too. Yeah. Oh, the whole time. That was legit in the stable. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like very much living what was actually happening.
Well, Lane, it's great talking to you and reconnecting. And hopefully Country Hearts is the biggest movie in television history. And we get a chance to do some more with this world and work together some more.
Yeah, I would love that. It's been so great, you know, chatting with you and just being a part of this. And please do let
me
know.
Yes.
When you're coming to perform in LA again.
I promise. You will be the first to know. I will have you there with VIP all the way.
Oh, yeah. I'm in.
All right. Thank you, Lainey.
Thank you, Chris. Talk to you soon.
Bye.